Thank you, Prem and Hari Shankar. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanthanilayam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And welcome to this last segment of Thursday live broadcast from the studios of Radio Sai. I'm Team Radio Sai Spishu. The time in the studios now is 8:37 and the weather outside is really pleasant. The summer heat has almost receded from Prashanthanilayam, and last night there was a mild drizzle. Even this afternoon there was a beautiful little shower, and there are these refreshing showers from the above all the time. And in the ashram, if you walk in the lanes of this divine hamlet now, you really experience this lovely breeze, thanks to the green cover, the trees, the plants, the lawns and the mountains. In fact, sometimes we really need to do a program on the topography of Prashanthanilayam, of this ashram, how this is a valley nestled in between so many mountains and greenery. Yes, there is a lot of greenery in the ashram, even though this belongs to the Rayalaseema area. And the extraordinariness of this locale is something which we really have to ponder on, because this is the sacred spot on earth that the Lord chose to make his advent. Puttaparthi, as Baba said more than 50 years ago, this place is going to transform into another Tirupati, another Kashi, another Shirdi, and perhaps its glory will only grow exponentially as years pass by, because the way this place has transformed itself during the physical presence of the avatar itself is so phenomenal. It never happened in the history of humanity before. The present Shirdi Dham that we see now took shape, the current shape, many, many, many decades after Shirdi Sai left his mortal coil, and Tirupati has been in existence for centuries. So one can only imagine what Prashanthanilayam is going to morph into in the years and decades to come. So Prashanthanilayam in this month is vibrant as ever, and soon we will see preparations for the opening festival of this calendar year, for this academic year, Guru Purnima. And the good thing about this month of June is that this is the time when we see new faces, new students join the Sri Sathya Sai educational institutions. In this beautiful valley, there are new boys and girls in the Sri Sathya Sai primary school, in the higher secondary school, new teenagers in the Prashanthanilayam campus of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, and of course, the hostel, the Sri Sathya Sai hostel too, seems so new because so many bright new faces, eager and inquisitive faces, some apprehensive, some trying to figure out what's going on, some liking it straight away, and some questioning every part of the hostel routine, some testing the system, and go on, and so on. It goes, every boy, it's a new experience for the boy and for everyone in this hamlet. And this is but natural, because the way the educational system is structured here is so different. The routine in the hostel is rigorous, and many feel that it is uncompromising. In fact, I remember talking to an alumnus, Mr. Harish Mirpuri, who passed out of this system almost 20 years ago, and he was telling me how after he left this university, some of his old friends caught up with him and asked, "Harish, you're such a strange guy, man. How come you finished your college, your entire education, your graduation and post-graduation, the best years of a student's life, and you didn't have any fun? No going out, no hanging around with guys for a movie, for a thriller, or no female friends, no interesting adventures or misadventures, however way you want to put it. And you come from such a prosperous family, and you have spent your entire college life missing out all those things that all the colleges give so freely. That is what college is made up of." And Harish said, "Oh, I never thought this way. I mean, that was the first time I thought, yeah, really, this is strange. How come I never even had a desire for any of this stuff when I was in this hostel?" And he told that friend, "You know what? You are right. Actually, I did not do any of those stuff. But the interesting thing is, I actually did not feel that desire for any of these things. I don't know how. Maybe because we just didn't have time. I mean, we are so occupied with a million things to do from morning till night. There is absolutely no free mental space to think about anything else. So that is how tight is the schedule in the Sri Satya Sai hostel. And there are many things which many new boys may not be familiar with in their lives before. For example, take this concept of prayer. In the hostel, there is an early morning prayer, Suprabhatam. Then there is a food prayer before breakfast. Then there is the prayer in the college before classes begin. Then at lunch, again, food prayer. In the evening, you have prayer in the mandir for more than an hour. You go back to the hostel and again prayer before dinner. And the day again ends with a prayer, the night prayer. There is so much prayer. And actually, this entire schedule is laid down by Bhagwan himself. So definitely there is a lot of significance attached to each one item in the hostel routine. And last Thursday during this hour, we had begun to discuss about just one of these aspects. That is the food prayer. Actually, the discussion last time was an elaboration of the mind-body-food connection. As Bhagwan used to say, food do, head do, blood do. And we discussed in detail how the food we consume can and does affect our mental makeup immensely. So we brought examples and research studies from science and other disciplines to deliberate on this. And towards the end, we concluded how it is for this reason precisely that food must necessarily be offered to God. And that is when we just began talking about Brahmarpanam. And so, dear listeners, today we want to continue the discussion from where we left off last time. And before we begin, let us first offer our grateful salutations to Bhagwan for having blessed us with this opportunity to know about Him, to think about Him, and to share His love. Dear Lord, please bless us so that we always determine to translate into our lives earnestly all those beautiful principles that you so painstakingly explained and lived and laid down for us. With this prayer, let's move on and welcome dear listeners to this yet another episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. And today we discuss the magnificent property of Brahmarpanam, the food prayer. I'm Team Radio Sai's Vishu, and joining me in this discussion are brothers Pavan Nandan and brother Anant, both of them young scientists and researchers. You heard them last time. Both of them have done their studies in IIT. One of them has done his post-graduation, another has done his graduation, and now both of them are into academics in a big way. And today we have another illustrious alumnus joining us. He too is into his research. He's pursuing his PhD now in Bhagwan's University in the Department of Chemistry after completing his bachelor's and master's in Bhagwan's College here in Prashantanilayam. Brother Sai Giridhar. He's not unfamiliar to those who listen to Radio Sai Study Circles. So we are very happy to have all of them with us again for this episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you very much, brothers, for coming, and welcome to all of you.
Thank you, Vishu, for the opportunity.
So last time, you know, we started discussing about how what we eat leads us to our thoughts, how what we think is actually what we eat. And then we heard a disclosed clip of Bhagwan explaining how in this context chanting Brahmarpanam is so important. So shall we begin listening to this mantra?
That'll be great.
This is in the voice of Ravi Kumar. Let's start by just listening to this verse, and then we'll start deliberating on this.
Om Brahmarpanam Brahmahavih Brahmagno Brahmanahutam Brahmaivatena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhina Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashritah Pranap पानसमायुक्तः पचाम्यन्नं चतुर्विधम् ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
So this mantra, which is familiar to most Balyuka students and all those who have been in the Sai fraternity, and perhaps all of us have chanted it so many times, but I don't know how many of us really have spent some time pondering over the meaning of this mantra. Brother Anand, what comes to you as what is being conveyed in this mantra?
Now that's well said, Brother Bishu, in the sense we keep chanting this so many times, and just because Bhagavan has mentioned to us that this is a potent mantra to be chanted before food. So every time the plate of food is in front of you, inevitably you start chanting it. But with a little pause and pondering over the meaning, it brings us a different light. Yes, so if we can go word by word to understand what it is, and then maybe a comprehensive meaning can be given to it. Now for a word by word translation, now, Brahma Arpanam, Brahmahavi. So, Brahma is the substratum of this universe, the spiritual one being. Arpanam is offering. So, Brahma Arpanam is the first word. And comes the second word, Brahmahavi. Yeah, so again, to the substratum. Now, it is said, Havihi is butter, that which melts. Well, it could also mean the heart which melts.
Mm-hmm.
The core of every being, that which melts.
Mm-hmm.
Which is offered to that one never-changing being.
So offering your heart.
Exactly. Yeah, so the first line thus goes, the act of offering, you know, is Brahma.
The act of offering is Brahma, and what you're offering is your heart.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, going to the second sentence, Brahmagnav, Brahmanahutam. Now, Brahma again is a spiritual being or the substratum.
Yes.
Agnav is a fire that consumes, the Agni that consumes. So the Agni also is Brahma.
Brahman.
Yeah. And Brahmanahutam. So the Ahuti, that which is offered, is also Brahma.
So what is burning is Brahma, and what is being offered also is Brahma.
Exactly. Exactly. And going to the third sentence, Brahmaiva tena gantavyam. Yeah, so certainly, now here this word Brahmaiva is split into Brahma and Iva. So Brahma is a substratum, Iva is certainly,
mm-hmm.
with certainty.
Mm-hmm.
Tena gantavyam. So tena is by the one who is performing this offering or oblation. Gantavyam is to be reached. So with all certainty, the one who is offering this oblation will establish himself in Brahma.
The one who is offering will establish himself
in Brahma. So he himself basically, the ego self which is offering basically vanishes and it establishes in Brahma.
Brother, here when we say Brahma,
yes,
we are referring not to the Chaturmukhi Brahma, but the Brahman.
Brahman.
The cosmic consciousness as
the Sat aspect. Yes. Beautiful, beautiful. And the last sentence, all the more potent, Brahma Karma Samadhina. Yeah? So, Brahma is a spiritual substratum of the universe. Yeah, so that's what Brother Sai Giridhar was mentioning, that it is that Sat.
That's pure consciousness, basically.
It's a pure existence alone, Sat.
Yes.
Yeah, so now, if that substratum is seen in every karma, Brahma Karma. So, in every action that is being performed, when that Brahma is seen, then one gets completely in laya with Brahma. One merges.
One becomes.
Samadhina.
Samadhina.
One
becomes
absorbed,
one.
Becomes one with Brahma. Yes, so
I mean, it sounds so profound.
What a lofty idea.
Yes, it's so lofty.
In the sense that it's literally saying that if you recognize when you're eating that it is everything is Brahman, that is, the food is Brahman, the process of eating is Brahman, one who is eating is Brahman, verily you verily can become Brahman itself. That is, you realize that you are God.
Absolutely. There's absolutely no difference there, you know. So it's all just one. That aspect of oneness comes that just at that moment of experience of just as meaning, bringing out the meaning itself brings so much of lightness in oneself that one just merges.
I'm really wondering that, you know, it sounds so profound, and this mantra, and I don't know how many people really relate to it while eating. And eating is such a common experience, you know, it's a routine thing that you do every day, but Swami has attached such a profound meaning to it.
You stroll by the street, you find something on the way, you just, a chaat bhandar or something like that.
Yes.
And you just pick up that chaat and eat. Yeah. Like, eating is such a common thing.
It's a common thing. But if you see the mantra that Swami has given for this, it is at some, you feel it is at some other level altogether. So connecting these two, I don't know if there's any other way, any simplified way by which you can understand this mantra. And if you tell someone, that this is the whole purpose is Brahman and everything is Brahman, and I don't know if he'll be able to connect to it. No, I may be wrong. I'm just trying to.
Yeah, maybe to start with, we need a simple understanding of
A, B, C, D.
Sure.
Pavan, if you have anything to add here.
Yeah, so it seems that the prayer is complex enough.
Yes.
And the idea is, as Bhagwan always did, to simplify.
Yes.
So, what is it that we're trying to do here? What is the end result? I think it's clear that what we're trying to do here is constantly remind ourselves that everything in this universe, manifest universe, is nothing but a temporary form of God. So when we look at, an item of food, we need to just stop, pause for a moment, at the beginning at least, and remind ourselves that this is really, verily, a form of God. So this disconnect then between what we do if something is not God and something is God, probably vanishes subsequently, but at least in the beginning, once we know something is God, it's holy. So you're going to, be more treated more as a sacred offering, which is what this process of eating becomes then. So from being a mundane activity where you're dissociating yourself with the act of eating altogether, you're going to be involved in it every moment, because what is going inside is verily God itself, and the real consumer of the food itself is that God. So
in some ways we are all the time reminding ourselves that what is in front of you has to be treated with a lot of reverence.
Exactly.
Because that is going inside you. It is not almost a form of God. It is God in some way, because it is giving you, it is what helping you to grow. It is what sustaining you.
I think a simple way to understand this is, we all know that the food that we eat is nothing but the solar energy captured by the plants, and it is the same energy that becomes part of us, and we were just small little babies when we were born, and this whole structure that we have gained over many years is nothing but accumulated food.
Yes.
So it is that energy, that food which has come from nature, which has become part of us. But Swami says energy is God, nature is God.
Yes.
So I think that becomes a little more easier way to understand that very same sun's energy captured by the plants is what is food that we partake, and again becomes part of us. So that way energy is God, so food is also God.
So it's kind of a very forceful reminder that everything around you is God, this food is also God, and what you're taking inside is also God.
Absolutely. And
to carry on with that thread, or really, I was just going to add that at the beginning, probably all this seems like a lot of thinking to be doing while you're eating.
Yes.
But as it gets assimilated into our system or thought, it becomes less of thinking and more of really living in the now. So every bite you take in, it's just natural. You're just living in the now, because you know that it's a holy thing what you're doing.
Yes.
You cannot, and as we'll be getting to this later, at that moment you're not going to be doing anything else. You're going to be really concentrating on eating the food and assimilating it properly, because...
Perhaps food also will taste much better.
Exactly.
Very true.
In fact, just like what Brother Pavan was mentioning, living in the now is very important, because Bhagwan has been mentioning to us that being in the present, he says omnipresent.
Yes.
It is just amazing that this mantra or this prayer has this potency of not only portraying food as God, but the one who consumes, I am also God.
Yes.
Not just that food. No, the food is Brahma, so am I here.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
I mean, you are also constituted of that food. If the food is God, why not you?
Exactly.
Yes. So I think as we discuss, there is such a profound concept here. What we'll do is, we will listen to Bhagwan's clip. We'll just pause and listen to Bhagwan's clip. And then probably, because what you've discussed now is only the first two lines of the mantra. And I know there is so much more when the next part of the mantra comes, when Aham Vaishva Naro Bhutva is there.
Just before you go further, Brother Bishop, just to remind the listeners of, this is in chapter 4, verse 24.
Bhagavad Gita.
Right. Yes, yeah. So this is not something that, Swami just created now. It has been there for centuries.
He has created it more than 5,000 years ago.
Oh, that's correct.
It's just reminding us, I think, all the things that Bhagavan has told. It's always there. He's just only pointing us and reminding us of our glorious heritage. So let's just listen to Bhagavan's clip and then we'll discuss further.
Sure.
Deshamu, Asuya, Kamamu, దుర్మార్గ భావములు ఇలాంటివి హృదయములో చేరినటువంటి వారికి,
దోస్ విత్ ఆల్ హేట్రెడ్, జెలస్ అండ్ వికెట్ క్వాలిటీస్ ఇన్ హార్ట్,
తాను అన్నము తినే సమయమునందు,
యాజ్ హి ఈట్స్ ఫుడ్,
ఆ యొక్క జీర్ణకోశమునందుండేటువంటి దుర్వాసన మెదడుకు తగులుతుంది.
ఆల్ దట్ ఈస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఇన్ ద డైజెస్టివ్ సిస్టమ్ విల్ రీచ్ ద బ్రెయిన్.
ఆ దుర్వాసన అనేటువంటిది మెదడుకు సోకినప్పుడు దుర్బుద్ధులు ప్రారంభమవుతూ వస్తాయి.
వెన్ ఆల్ దిస్ ఫౌల్ స్మెల్ గోస్ టు ద బ్రెయిన్, హి విల్ హావ్ బ్యాడ్ హ్యాబిట్స్.
కనుకనే ఆహారము నుండి పానీయము నుండి కూడాను ఈ విధమైనటువంటి దుర్మార్గ శక్తులు సకాలములో, అనగా నియమం పాటించకుండా పోయినప్పుడు, ఇలాంటివన్నీ మానవునికి అనేక ప్రమాదములు కలిగిస్తుంటాయి.
When discipline is not observed, all these wicked qualities come out of food and drink.
అసలు మనసు ఎక్కడ నుంచి పుడుతుండాలి?
Where from the mind originates.
మనసు ఆహారం నుంచే పుడుతుండాలి.
The mind is originated out of
food. మనం ఎట్టి ఆహారమును భుజించుమో,
as is the food,
అట్టి మనసుగానే పోతుంది.
So is the mind.
కనుకనే పూర్వ మహర్షులందరూ కూడాను సాత్విక ఆహారాన్ని భుజించమని చెప్తూ వచ్చారు.
Therefore ancient rishis said that you should eat sattvic food.
మన ప్రాణం ఏమిటి?
What is our life?
త్రాగే నీరే ప్రాణం.
The water is life.
తిన్నటువంటి ఆహారం స్థూలమైనటువంటిది మలంగా వెళుతుంది.
The gross part of the food is left excreted.
సూక్ష్మమైనటువంటిది మజిల్స్ గా తయారవుతుంది.
సటిల్ ఫార్మ్ విల్ ట్రాన్స్ఫార్మ్ ఇంటు మజిల్.
ఆ సూక్ష్మమైనటువంటి ఆహారమే మనసుగా మారుతుంది.
సటిలెస్ట్ ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ ఫుడ్ బికమ్స్ మైండ్.
అదే రీతిగానే త్రాగిన నీరంతా కూడాను స్థూలమైనటువంటిది మూత్రముగా పోతుంది.
సో అవుట్ ఆఫ్ ద వాటర్ వి డ్రింక్, గ్రాస్ పోర్షన్ ఈజ్ ఎక్స్క్రీటెడ్.
సూక్ష్మమైనటువంటిది రక్తంగా రూపొందుతుంది.
ద సటిల్ పోర్షన్ ట్రాన్స్ఫార్మ్స్ ఇంటు బ్లడ్.
అతి సూక్ష్మమైనటువంటి జలమే ప్రాణంగా మారుతుంది.
ద సటిలెస్ట్ పోర్షన్ ఈజ్ ద లైఫ్.
కనుక జలములో ఆ ప్రాణశక్తి ఉంటుండాలి.
దేర్ఫోర్ దిస్ పవర్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్ ఇన్ వాటర్.
మనం జగత్తులో సామాన్యంగా మనం చూస్తుంటాము, ఎవరైనా మూర్చి వచ్చి పడిపోతే నీళ్లు తెచ్చి చల్లుతుంటారు.
We see in the world, if anyone is faint,
అనగా ఆ నీటిలో ఈ ప్రాణశక్తి ఉంటుండాలి.
We sprinkle water because there is power in water.
అయితే ఈ ఆహార పానీయములు మనము తీసుకునే సమయంలో సాత్వికమైన భావంతో తీసుకోవాలి.
So as we drink, as we eat, we should have good feelings.
కనుకనే పూర్వపు సాంప్రదాయములను పురస్కరించుకొని,
basing on the older tradition,
మనం భుజించే ముందుగా,
before eating,
అవమానం చేసేటువంటి ప్రాణాయన ప్రాణాయ స్వాహ అపాన స్వాహ జ్ఞానాయ స్వాహ ఉదాయన స్వాహ అని ఈ విధంగా భగవంతునికి అర్పితం చేసి ఆ జలము తీసుకునేటువంటి వాళ్ళు.
They used to offer water first to God and then drink.
పంచ ప్రాణములకు కూడాను అర్పితము చేసి,
offering to all five life principles,
అది ప్రసాదంగా భుజించటం చేత,
taking it as prasad,
ఆ ఆహారంలో దోషము లేకుండా పోతుందని,
there will be no defects in food.
ప్రాణ అపాన వ్యాన ఉదాన ప్రమాణములైనటువంటి ఈ పంచ ప్రాణములు కూడా మొట్టమొదటి అతిథం గావించమని ప్రబోధిస్తూ వచ్చింది సాంఖ్య దర్శన.
సాంఖ్య దర్శన టాట్ దట్ ఇట్ హాస్ టు బి ఆఫర్డ్ టు ఫైవ్ లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్స్.
మన విద్యార్థులకు బాగా తెలుసును,
అవర్ స్టూడెంట్స్ నో ప్రెటీ వెల్,
భుజించేకి ముందుగా,
Prior to taking food,
Bhagavat Arpitam, Brahmarpanam Brahmavi, Arpitam Chestunnaru.
We offer food to God.
ఎందుకోసం అర్పితం చేయమని.
వై షుడ్ ఇట్ బి ఆఫర్డ్?
ఈ యొక్క పదార్థములో మూడు విధములైన దోషములు ప్రవేశిస్తున్నాయి.
ఇన్ దిస్ మ్యాటర్ దేర్ విల్ బి త్రీ డిఫెక్ట్స్.
పాత్ర శుద్ధి,
ద క్లీన్లీనెస్ ఆఫ్ ద వెసల్,
పాక శుద్ధి,
ద క్లీన్లీనెస్ ఆఫ్
పదార్థ శుద్ధి,
అండ్ ద మ్యాటర్.
ఈ మూడు శుద్ధిగా ఉండినప్పుడే చిత్త శుద్ధి ఏర్పడుతుంది.
వెన్ ఆల్ ది త్రీ ఆర్ ప్యూర్ దేర్ విల్ బి ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ హార్ట్.
మూడు కూడా శుద్ధిగా లేనప్పుడు,
when there are three are not pure,
అశుద్ధి భావములు మనలో ఆవిర్భవిస్తాయి.
There will be no purity within us.
కనుకనే పాత్ర శుద్ధి మనం కొంతవరకు శుద్ధి చేయవచ్చును.
So we can keep the vessel clean.
కానీ పదార్థ శుద్ధి, ఏ అంగడిలో ఏం తెచ్చావో, ఆ అంగడి వాడు ఎక్కడ దొంగిలించి తెచ్చాడో, ఏ కూరగాయలు ఎవరి తోట తీసుకుని వచ్చాడో, ఇవన్నీ మనం చూడడానికి వీలు కాదు.
It's not possible to inquire how the material is brought, whether it is stolen or bought.
కనుక ఈ పదార్థములైనటువంటి యొక్క శుద్ధిని మనం చూడడానికి వీలు కాదు.
సో ఇట్స్ నాట్ పాసిబుల్ టు ఎంక్వైర్ ది క్లీన్లీనెస్ ఆఫ్ మెటీరియల్.
చేసేటువంటి వాడి భావాలు, ఈ వండే సమయంలో ఎలాంటి భావాలు ఉంటుంటాయో,
వాట్ ఫీలింగ్స్ దట్ ద కుక్ హ్యాస్ అట్ ద టైమ్,
వాడు ఏదైనా దుర్భావంతో దీన్నంతా వండుతూ ఉంటుంటే ఆ పదార్థంలో దుర్భావంలే ప్రవేశిస్తుంటాయి.
ఇఫ్ ది కుక్ హ్యాస్ బ్యాడ్ ఫీలింగ్స్ ద కుక్ ఫుడ్ ఆల్సో విల్ హావ్ బ్యాడ్.
కనుకనే ఈ పాత్ర శుద్ధి, పాక శుద్ధి, పదార్థ శుద్ధి చూడడానికి అసాధ్యమైన కనుకనే దానిని బ్రహ్మార్పణము, దానికి భగవంతునికి అర్పితంగా చేసినప్పుడు ఈ యొక్క దోషములన్నీ కూడా పరిహారం అయిపోయి అది పరిశుద్ధమైన రూపొందుతుంది. అప్పుడు దీన్ని భుజించడానికి అన్నం కాదది, ప్రసాదంగా రూపొందుతుంది.
As it is not possible to go into the inquiry of the cleanliness and the purity of the matter, the vessel and the cook, when once it is offered to God, then it becomes prasada.
ఇది పరిశుద్ధం కావడానికి లోపల ఉండేటువంటి యొక్క కారణం ఏమిటి?
What is the reason for its purification?
నీవు బ్రహ్మార్పణం చేసినప్పుడు, అహం వైశ్వానరో భూత్వ ప్రాణినాం దేహమాశ్రిత ప్రాణాపాన సమాయుక్త పచామ్యన్యం చతుర్విధం, అయ్యా నీవు లోపల పంపించినటువంటిదంతా కూడాను నేను వైశ్వాన రూపంలో ఉంటుండి నేనే దాన్ని జీర్ణిస్తున్నాను, కాబట్టి భగవంతుడే దాన్ని జీర్ణింపజేస్తున్నాడు కనుక అది పరిశుద్ధమైపోతుంది.
The food that you have eaten is digested by God within, therefore food is purified.
ఈ ప్రార్థనే చేయకుండా ఏదో జఠరాగ్నిలో వేస్తున్నానంటే ఏదో నిప్పులో వేసినటువంటి పదార్థం వలె మాడిపోతుంది.
If we don't offer prayer before eating, all that will be waste.
జఠరాగ్ని లోపల భగవంతుడు వైశ్వాన రూపంలో ఉన్నాడు అనేటువంటి విశ్వాసంతో వేయాలి.
We have to offer the prayer with full faith. God is present in the form of Vaishvanara.
So Bhagavan is explaining so clearly about why we should chant Brahmarpanam, and he went on to explain the meaning of Aham Vaishva also, and that I think has opened up so many leads for us, because every line here actually has so much for us to deliberate upon. And if you just take the one thing, you know, what comes to my mind is a very sweet incident that happened in Vrindavan, where on one occasion the boys had the chance to dine with Bhagavan in the hostel, and as Bhagavan was sitting on his tiny dining table and all the boys were sitting below, and the Brahmarpanam chanting started. The food was already served, and as the chanting began, you know, most of the time, you know, you look at Bhagwan, because Bhagwan is himself sitting there, so all of them are actually opening their eyes and they're chanting Brahmarpanam. And there was this little boy who had this sudden idea that, you know, why am I sitting and chanting Brahmarpanam? Brahma is already here, Swami is already sitting there, so what is the point of keeping my plate here and chanting? So he just cutely takes his plate and he goes to Swami with his plate. And Swami also, what he does is really very sweet. Actually that plate had some vadas, so Swami picks one vada, and from that vada he just takes out a protruding chili. Just takes that chili out, then he blesses that little one, and then he says, this is what Brahmarpanam does to the food. When you offer it to God, God takes away all that is evil.
Wonderful.
All that is not pleasant in the food.
Beautiful.
I mean, such an amazing way of demonstrating what Brahmarpanam can do for us. And I think there have been so many occasions after that where Bhagwan has reiterated the importance of chanting. And the other occasion that comes to my mind is in Trey Vrindavan, on one occasion when Bhagwan was asking each boy, apparently, Dr. Shivakumar, lecturer, sir, in Vrindavan, he narrated this. He was a personal witness to this. Swami was sitting in Trai, and Swami asked each one of the students to chant the Brahmarpan. Man, he was seeing how each person is chanting. And Swami mentioned that it should be Brahma Havir. R should be there. Because the Brahma Havis, people don't chant it properly. It's actually this two dots, ha and two dots. You don't get it properly. It may be wrong. So Swami said it should be Brahma Havir. And then Bhagwan was inspecting everyone's chanting. And there was a foreigner, a student who was from overseas who was studying. And Swami was very keen whether he will chant it. And when he also chanted it perfectly, Swami was extremely pleased. I mean, these were different scenes, you know, where Bhagwan showed us physically how important is this mantra.
And another thing, Vishu, is usually when where we falter while chanting. I remember in our school days, our warden used to stand amidst us and make us repeat 2-3 times so that we learn it well. It's not samadhinaha. Swami had made that change. It's samadhina.
Samadhina.
Karma samadhina. Mm. Many people by mistake chant samadhinaha.
It's a negation of the samadhina.
Yeah, very true.
As Bhagwan has mentioned.
Yes. Wonderful.
Amazing. Now that this reminds me of one article which I read about the potency of Brahmarpanam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just now, you know, Brother Bishu, you were mentioning about Swami, you know, being very keen on how it is being even chanted.
Yes.
And every chant produces a vibration.
Yes.
You know, and it has a potency of impacting the matter. Yeah, because it's all about energy matter. The whole universe creation is about energy matter. So it looks like a narration by you know, Uncle Prahlad Rao about an incident in Vrindavan. You brother should be knowing very well about it. Looks like in early 70s, but may not be during your times. In Vrindavan campus, all the college boys were called for lunch, and about 100 boys were in, and our Kirlian photographer, Dr. Frank Baronsky, was also invited to join. So he goes in, and having seen the hall with a lot of food, he had an intuition of taking a photograph of it. And he takes a photograph, and he finds nothing very specific about it to mention. And then later Swami arrives, and now all the boys start unanimously chanting Brahmarpanam. And after chanting Brahmarpanam, looks like he again takes a picture of the food.
Mm-hmm.
And now, to his surprise, the food is now emanating or radiating a blue aura.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually...
That's what he photographed, the Kirlian photograph.
Exactly. So Kirlian photography is basically for photographing the aura or the electromagnetic radiations which emanate from matter. Yes, as he photographed, he found a blue aura and he was surprised, and he went and humbly asked Swami, Bhagwan, what is it due to? What is this reason? You know, and then so Bhagwan says it actually consecrates. You know, it revitalizes the food.
Mm-hmm.
And because of which, this vibration which comes out, the electromagnetic radiation which comes out from the matter, is a direct indication of how the prayer touches every particle of the food that we consume.
Wow. That's really profound. It's almost a scientific evidence if you're looking for
absolutely
what the prayer does to the food.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
So, what exactly makes this hymn so exceptional, one might wonder. And I suppose Anant already seems to have given the answer.
Yes.
In terms of what Mr. Baranovsky found out before and after this prayer. So, really, I mean, it seems like the best form of evidence is already there. My thoughts on what makes it special is more on a personal note, if I might add.
Sure.
And I don't know if we have space for this later.
Yeah, please go ahead.
This is, for the last year and a half, I've had more or less a live experiment, mm-hmm, with Brahmarpanam. And just looking at what Bhagwan was saying in the discourse, I can see exactly before and after. I do think it's had a profound impact in terms of my entire system purification. And again, it's almost anecdotal, so I cannot, you know,
put it.
It's difficult to express. But in fact, many people who have seen me a few years back and have seen me now can notice that perhaps I do look and behave a lot more sattvic, as the prayer intends us.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, what better proof than personal proof, you know,
yes,
in this regard. So,
you have, from the last year or so, you've been chanting this mantra, and you definitely found some difference in the mental makeup.
Absolutely. I mean, I used to say that whatever thought patterns, the brain waves, alpha waves, whatever we call these things, I can see a significant difference in my own productivity, in my own purity, if I may say so.
Mm-hmm.
All this has definitely led me to conclude that there's something really exceptional about this, which subsequently, so to speak, caused me to look more into the origins of this and in the form that we've been discussing now. But I don't know if that's answered, you know, what we had in mind about the exceptional nature of this.
I think, yeah, I mean, what is exceptional about this is something that each person has to experience it, because it really cannot be measured so much by instruments or by science. And only when you do it, I think, just like all those things that comes to us via the sages and saints and by the scriptures, you have to put them into action to know the benefit. And the way Bhagwan was explaining that this whole concept of Brahma Pranam is actually, Swami was saying that it is actually a yajna. I mean, Giridhar, did you get that? I mean, it is such a profound thing. It actually hit me in the sense that the way Bhagwan is explaining, he's saying if you just put the food, not considering it as an yajna, then it just becomes, the food just goes into fire.
In fact, this is one perspective that has changed my life, so to speak, for the past few months at mm-hmm. least. When this became a practical realization to me that this is a yajna, changed my attitude towards food completely. In fact, Swami mentions in the discourse very clearly that, you know, there is a difference between simply throwing things into fire, like which simply just, you know, reduces it to dust, to ashes. And there is a difference between performing yajna and burning up things, right? So that difference is brought up by, you know, this prayer, Brahmarpanam, you know, before the process of having the food. For example, we discuss in the meaning. How is the yajna performed? We have all seen Atirudra Mahayajna here.
Yes.
We have seen the Dashara Yajnas happening every year. It's very interesting to draw a parallel between the yajna that happens, that we see here in Prashantanilayam, and the yajna that we actually knowingly or unknowingly do every single day, at least three times a day. And the similarity is very, very striking. If you see, the first and foremost thing in a yajna is the presence of fire. All the offerings are made in fire, right? And that fire has to be a natural fire. It cannot be an unnatural fire, right? You will see that yajna, the way they don't take a matchstick and light the
yes.
fire, they actually take two logs of wood.
Yes.
And through friction, they create fire. And it is that fire into which, you know, the oblations, everything is offered into. In the same way, if you consider this, if I may call Vaishvanara Yajna, as
yes.
Swami says, Aham Vaishvanara, he's the fire who, in the form of Vaishvanara, divinity resides in us, and that is the fire that digests our food. It's a natural fire. It is. We don't have to light up a fire each time.
Yes.
We eat food. It's a natural fire which is there in our stomach, which produces the necessary acids and all that to break down the food. You know, breaks it into necessary, unnecessary particles, and you know the whole distribution of energy and everything else. Just like a yajna happens. The other prerequisite for a yajna is the purity of the offering. It is very, very important and sacrosanct that when you perform an yajna, whatever is being offered into the yajna has to be absolutely pure and sacred. In fact, people take lot of strain to ensure that, you know, what is being procured is procured in a righteous way, as Swami was mentioning about Padartha Shuddhi. It's very difficult to know, but people do put in lot of effort in that direction when you perform a yajna, that you get the yajna samagri, as it is called, the
yes.
Items which are offered in the yajna, in a very righteous way, a proper way, a pure substance is procured. It is not enough there. Then they offer prayers. They offer it to God. Invoke His presence. And one should always remember that in a yajna, the presence of divinity is invoked, not sought or not invited. The difference between invitation and invocation is, invitation is given to somebody who is not there.
Mm. Yes.
Outside. He's somewhere else.
Outside.
And you outside. So you want to invite that person. But in an invocation, that entity is already present there. The yajna purusha, you know, the one who is the witnesser of the yajna, is already there within us. That is the divinity. Swami says, this deha has a dehi.
Yes.
And that dehi is divinity. That divinity already resides in us. So it is more an invocation than an invitation that we make to God when we chant Brahmarpanam every single day, three times a day. So it is no less a yajna that we are performing. I am just reminded of another fact file which I came across. Our scriptures say that in order that one has to attain the status or the post of Indra, one has to do 1,000 Ashwamedha yajnas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I was just comparing this to this Vaishwanara yajna that we are doing, where everything is Brahman. The food is Brahman, the process of eating is Brahman, one who is eating is Brahman, where it is absolutely God, God and God and nothing but God. Such a sacred yajnam is performed not once but at least three times a day, which means in a month 90 times, in 10 months 900 times, and in a year you see a divine number coming up again, 1080 times.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
That's right.
1080 times in just 1 year. You can perform 1080 yajnas in a year simply by reminding ourselves just before our food that, yes, this food is God. The one who is digesting this food is God. What is the outcome of this food, which is energy, is also God. It is as simple as that. So
wonderful,
each one of us.
So I mean, I don't know. We don't really think about it so much. Every time we eat, it's actually a ritual.
Yes, it is not just ritual; it is spiritual.
Oh yes,
the spirit
right.
or God element behind it is not just remembered, but you recognize that there is nothing other than God.
So I guess every time there is food before you, I think if you have that kind of a mindset,
yes,
I think definitely what it does to us in terms of the way the food gets distributed in the body and what it does to our mind will definitely, I think, will have an impact. We probably cannot measure it, but
in
intuitively
fact,
you can feel
just
it.
Just to add a couple of more practical changes it brought into me, this perspective is,
mm-hmm.
Earlier I used to, feel okay with having food wherever we want.
Yes.
Friends would gather, we would just stand around anywhere, chat and then have food.
Have
which
chat.
Which is the usual, have chat with chat.
Yes.
Which is a usual thing, it's very common.
Yes.
But once I recognized that it is a yajnam,
mm-hmm.
That also made me realize the significance of how Swami has designed our hostels. We see that the prayer hall and the dining hall in our hostel are not different.
Beautiful. Yes, in every hostel.
That's right.
Yeah, Where we do prayer is the same place where we have food in the hostel. And everything in the hostel has been handpicked, designed and personally monitored and, you know, planned by Swami himself. And there is a deep meaning to it. So one, the moment you start realizing that it's a yajna, you wouldn't want to eat food in any other place other than a divine ambience. You always want to perform the yajna in a good ambience. So then the ambience begins to matter. Which also Swami says affects your mind through the food.
Yes.
If you are going to be eating, amidst other distractions.
It's beautiful that now Brother Sai Giridhar has mentioned about the connection of food and mind, which we have been pondering.
Mm.
I happened to come across this book, The Omnivorous Mind, by John S. Allen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it says actually The Omnivorous Mind, Our Evolving Relationship with Food.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm just quoting just one aspect. He says, we don't eat with our mouth, we eat with our mind.
Okay.
Which I thought was a very profound sentence, because see, what we consume is,
yes,
is actually the subtler, the sukshma aspect which Bhagavan has brought out so beautifully.
Yes.
You know, and purity plays an extremely important role in that.
Amazing. And the thing that he mentioned, you know, frankly, when I was in the hostel, I did think many times that, you know, why Swami has to put everything we have to do in the hostel in the same hall. It is the prayer hall where we have to, you know, sit and do the suprabhatam, and it is the prayer hall where we have to do all our functions. The prayer hall again we'll have to dine. I mean, you have to sit down and eat, and you know, you have to again put the tables and tables have to be arranged every time. Why can't we have another hall?
So every atom there is reverberating the effect of the prayer vibration.
Yeah, Pavan.
Actually, I wanted to if Giridhar could elaborate a little more on the aspect that the fire is natural. You were saying we don't light a match. I was wondering if that's when you get the signal that you're really hungry, is that is when you're supposed to eat, as opposed to eating whenever you want at whatever frequency? Is that how your natural hunger you feel? So for example, you would eat every half an hour as opposed to really eating every 5-6 hours apart, right?
Yeah,
that's when the natural hunger.
It's a beautiful question that you're asking, and I was just going through a discourse of Bhagwan, and this is a discourse which was given I think in the early 90s, in fact 1993 or so, during the summer course at Vrindavan. Swami was talking about yoga. And we all know that the first step in the yoga, the Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali, the first step is Yama and Niyama. So Niyama means a certain level of regulation which we have to follow. In fact, Swami says, Na Shreyo Niyamam Vina. That is, no well-being is obtained without discipline. Niyama is that kind of a discipline. And in this context, I would like to kind of just quote Swami directly and
sure.
Read out from the discourse.
It's interesting that you have this discourse now with you. He asked this question out of the blue.
I think this is how Swami works. this is Swami, and I quote, Yoga lays down certain disciplines, niyama, like partaking of moderate, balanced and pure food. But modern man flaunts the yogic discipline by helping himself with spicy and sumptuous food to cater to his greedy tongue. He ignores the ancient doctrine. This is a very important sentence, I feel. He ignores the ancient doctrine that food should be taken like medicine for the disease of hunger.
Hunger is a disease and food is
See
a medicine.
That it's so yeah. Specifically and beautifully clarified by Bhagavan. He says, food should be taken like medicine for the disease of hunger. We should take the medicine, whether it is tasty or not, to cure our illness. You know, there's another thing with food. We always take food which we like. We don't take food which we dislike. So which means there are certain vitamins, essential minerals and vitamins which are missing out because they might not be so tasty, the way they come to us. But Swami is very clear. He says we should take it like medicine. Whether it is tasty or not, to cure our illness we should take. And he continues, but the modern man flouts this discipline and feeds voraciously on spiced food. Example, Indians make use of a bit of tamarind to savor their dishes. though tamarind is detrimental to health, the modern man has hence fallen prey to mental debility and blood pressure. And of course, Swami goes on from there. I think Swami has made it very clear that the discipline of food is when you feel hungry and how much you need to eat. In fact, we'll discuss that based on an experience a little later.
Sure.
But just to get the point on the table, Swami has very clearly mentioned that you should eat only how much is required by you. So only when there is hunger.
Real hunger.
Yes. Yes.
Thanks.
I mean, you definitely cannot indulge, because depending on what your disease is, I think you can only take only that much medicine. You don't really gorge on medicines.
Yes, very good.
It's really interesting. And as Pawan was narrating his experience, I remember talking to one alumnus, Brother Anant Vijay, and he was narrating how on one occasion in Vrindavan, this is a direct experience with Bhagwan, in Vrindavan, they were there staying in the hostel because they were doing industrial visit, you know, their first batch of MBA, and they were staying in the Vrindavan hostel because they have to go to the Bangalore city for visiting these factories as part of their industrial visit program, part of the MBA course. And so it was one of those days when in the afternoon they were just relaxing, and it was still 2-3 hours for darshan time, and 12 boys in one room, and there was some confusion, and you know, so they were talking very loudly, and there was some big discussion and a lot of heated exchange of words that happened that day. And when they went for darshan that day, Bhagwan came straight to these boy, Anant Vijay and his other classmates, and Swami said in Telugu, "Why are you shouting like dogs? Kukkalaga, kukkalaga edustunar or something. You know, why are you shouting like dogs?" And this boy was speechless. He didn't know what to say to defend himself. So he just said, "Swami, what to do, Swami? It just comes out, and I like all sorts of food. Actually, I really like spicy food, and I eat a lot of that. And maybe because of that, Swami, it has nothing got to do with me. You know, it's all because of the food that I eat, and I like a lot of masala, and I like a lot of spice. And maybe because of that, Swami, I have these tendencies. I cannot control my tongue, Swami. It's very difficult. I very difficult for me to, just like Oscar Wilde, who said that I can resist anything except temptation." So there, you know, I think many of us can relate to that. So this is what the boy said, and look at the love of Bhagwan. Swami said, "Okay, tinu bangaru." He said, "Fine, you eat if you want spice, if you want masala, but chant brahmarpanam."
Beautiful, isn't it? Beautiful.
I mean, that much concession that Bhagwan gave.
He's ready to accept the spice for your sake.
For your sake.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that you are mentioning, Giridhar, about, you know, how you really become more conscious about eating outside. In fact, there is another instance that Brother Anant Vijay only mentioned. There was this occasion where during that industrial visit, they were, as I mentioned, they were going to the cities, and one day, Swami had gone to the city to visit some devotee's house, and they didn't have a factory visit that day. So sort of they had nothing to do in the Vrindavan ashram. And one of their classmates, he was actually the son of the then ISRO chief, you know, Indian Space Research Organization. So he really came from a very well-to-do family. So he said, "All of you, why don't you come to my house?" So they said, "Anyway, there's nothing to do. Swami will come back in the evening." So they just took a drive. And on the way, they stopped and they had chaat. Everyone would like to freak out. So that's what they did. And then they went to his house and they had a good time in his home. And then they came back. And the next day, Swami came straight to them. And Swami said, "I know, yesterday you all had your day out. And you not only went to his house, you stopped and you had that chaat." And then Swami said, I don't know the exact Telugu words, but Swami said, "See, when you eat outside, ruchi can be there. There can be ruchi.
That is taste.
That is taste.
Taste, yes.
But what about suchi?" Mm. Suchi means cleanliness.
Purity.
Yes. Purity.
Purity.
Yes. Swami said, "Ruchi will be there, but what about suchi? You should not forget that."
Beautiful.
It's really amazing nuggets coming from Bhagwan itself. talking about the, I mean, how important is this mantra?
In fact, Swami never loses an opportunity to teach us these wonderful lessons of life. And I'm reminded of a very beautiful experience that took place in Chennai in the year 2007 when we had the wonderful opportunity to accompany Bhagawan.
Yes, during the Atirudra time.
Yeah. We used to dine in Bhagawan's physical presence, which was such a beautiful experience, life-changing experience. And Swami decided to utilize this opportunity. You know, God never misses a single opportunity to bring about that transformation in us. And it was one such day, and we were all seated around Bhagawan. First is a very pleasant experience leading to a pleasant understanding. The second experience was a little tough experience, but again leading to a wonderful, pleasant understanding. You know, Swami is like that. And the first one was, we sit around Swami. Around five of us would dine along with Swami, with elders, because of the limitation of space. And other six or seven of us would have our food in a special dining hall, which was arranged for us separately.
So it was a very tiny dining hall with Swami, where you
had. Yeah, where we had with Swami could accommodate maybe like 10 or 11 people other than Bhagawan.
Okay.
So five or six of us used to sit, and five elders.
Elders on the chairs.
In that room. Mm-hmm. So we used to alternate sessions. So one session we will have in the other dining hall, which was made for us, and one session with Swami. So we would alternate sessions with Swami.
So that all boys get chance.
So that, yeah, we were around 12, 13 of us, so we would alternate the sessions. And one such session, we all chanted Brahmarpanam together. And the usual, ritual would be that we would chant, the food is first served on all our plates, and even Swami's plate. Food is first served, and then we all chant Brahmarpanam together. And with folded hands, we all enjoy that most wonderful sight of Swami taking those first morsels and putting it into his mouth. And the moment Swami partakes the food, only after that we partake the food. So this particular session, we all did the same thing. Food was served. Swami's food also was ready on his plate. He eats very, very little. It was on his plate. And we all chanted Brahmarpanam. And with folded palms, we were looking at Swami. When would he take his first morsel? But Swami was, in no mood to eat.
Mm-hmm.
He was looking at us and he was saying, come on, eat, start eating. So one of us took courage to say, Swami, first Swami should partake, then only we will eat. Then Swami said, such a wonderful revelation. Swami said, Chudu, you all have chanted Brahmarpanam. All that food has already reached me.
Wow.
I am full. How much more can I eat?
Oh my God.
I felt that moment, what a splendid revelation. It is not at all an ordinary affair. That when we think of Swami and say Brahmarpanam each day, Swami physically showed us on that day that he said, when you chanted Brahmarpanam, it has already reached me. I am full. How much more do you expect me to eat? I felt that was a most phenomenal revelation from Bhagawan on that day regarding this aspect. This will take us a long way if we recognize
Yes. That
every time we chant Brahmarpanam, Swami is directly receiving it. Himself.
He basically broke then, the ritual and then put it there.
And
yeah,
then,
exactly.
I think then when you eat, also I think you'll be very careful. Then your eating becomes, as we discussed, not only ritual, it becomes spiritual. And you're very careful about everything.
Yes.
Suppose you don't want to eat anything, you would take it out of the plate before that.
In fact, the second experience, Swami taught us how to make this ritual spiritual.
Oh, wow.
Please
go on.
Beautiful experience again. What had happened was, one other session, suddenly Swami, acted as though he noticed only then that there were only five of us and the other six or seven were missing for the session. So he asked, "Aa pillalu ekkada, where are the rest of the boys?" So one of the elders said, "Swami, vallu kinda unnaru Swami, inko dining hall lo unnaru. They are in another dining hall which is below." And then Swami said, "Aa naaku telusu, vallaki Swami tho tinalani ledu."
Oh.
Swami said, I know. These boys, they are not interested to eat with Swami. So immediately we all bursted out saying, no Swami, what other greater opportunity is there than to dine with Bhagwan? It is a lifetime opportunity. So we were expressing our...
It's just that there is no space or whatever.
Yeah. So then one of the elders said, Swami, Atlaka Swami, not that way. The space is limited here, so only 5 or 6 of them can sit here. That's, others are all there. But Swami was in a different mood altogether.
Okay.
So he said, no. I know these boys,
okay,
they don't want to eat in my presence, because if they eat downstairs, they can chat, laugh and eat as per their will.
Mm-hmm.
If they are in Swami's presence, they have to be silent while eating.
Mm.
He then continued and said, if they are downstairs, they will eat how much ever they want, whatever they want. But if they are in Swami's presence, they will eat only what is required. You know, Swami recognized that. And it's a practical experience. Those of us,
yes,
who have had this opportunity, we,
yes,
will know that when Swami is watching, you'll be very careful,
very
about
careful,
you know, what you take and,
yes,
you know, how much you eat and all that.
I remember how Anil Kumar sir used to tell Bhagwan, Bhagwan, after you go upstairs, don't worry Swami, I'm going to gorge.
I start my meal after that. Yes, yes. So, but there is a beautiful lesson in this.
Yes.
In the sense that, just think about it. Which means the corollary of what Swami said is also true. Swami said, in my presence, when you chant Brahmarpanam, I directly receive the food. In my presence, you cannot talk while you are eating. In my presence, you will eat only what is required, how much is required. The corollary of it, when we are having our food, if we think of Bhagwan and genuinely offer it to him with Brahmarpanam, it reaches him and invokes his presence.
Mm-hmm.
If we eat food in absolute silence, then we are in verily in his presence. And if we eat only what is required, again, we manifest or we invoke his presence. Swami said, in my presence, these three things happen, which means if we ensure that these three things happen, that is, we offer it to him genuinely, remembering him, we eat in absolute silence. Swami says, sometimes absolute silence is difficult. It's not just the physical silence, the mind will go blah, blah, blah. So Swami says, if not absolute silence, at least do some namasmarana. That is okay.
Yes.
But don't even talk to yourself while you're eating. So that is silence. And the third thing is you eat only how much you need.
Yes.
So if we ensure these three things every single meal, we are verily dining with Bhagwan.
Wow.
This opportunity he is giving to us, what a secret.
Amazing.
He has revealed to all of us.
I think in such a beautiful manner Swami has explained the do's and don'ts of eating.
Yes.
How we should eat. And when you come to think of it, I mean, when you think of what is happening in the world today, you feel so sad, because you find so many youngsters today, you know, they are so glued to various gadgets. When you are eating, you are either texting someone, or you are reading a message on the phone, or you are talking on the phone and eating. By no stretch of imagination it is anything sacred or reverent or anything holy. Or you are watching TV, and there are, I think, of this generation where, you know, without something going on in the TV, there is no appetite.
You know, Brother Bishu, the mind is eating more of the TV than actually the food which is on the plate. Yeah, so only the grosser aspect goes in, whereas the sukshma actually is received from the TV.
Yes.
Yes. I'm just prompted and reminded of a very direct experience of a Balvika's child,
mm-hmm,
who used to come to our center,
mm-hmm,
where, in our home.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my wife used to take Balvika's classes, and he's a 5-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
And in Balvika's, what is being taught is you should not see TV while eating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have tried counseling the parents as well, saying that, you see, you should be supporting and complimenting what the child learns, whereas it doesn't happen so. And a year passed, and we hear from a few of our other friends that this child goes and compels everyone that the TV should be put off because the teacher has told.
Mm-hmm.
And this child feels a kind of serenity and a silence if the TV is put off and he can focus on the food.
Wow.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so
fantastic.
an innocent childlike mind goes straight with the connection to the God, to the Lord, just the faith the child has on the teacher.
Yes.
You know, and Bhagavan's statements are so profound, in the sense, the experience is so profound to oneself.
Yes.
And then it starts going out.
In fact, I have a beautiful clip where Bhagavan is emphasizing on this point, you know, how today parents actually misguide and put their children on the wrong path by acceding to their requests. And, you know, in fact, they are, instead of putting the children on the right path, they are the ones who are actually at fault, Bhagavan says. Let's listen to that clip and then we'll talk about it.
హాస్టల్లో చేస్తున్నామంటే ఒక నిర్బంధంగా భావిస్తున్నారు కొంతమంది మూర్ఖులైన విద్యార్థులు.
సమ్ ఫూల్ స్టూడెంట్స్ టేక్ ఇట్ యాజ్ అ మ్యాటర్ ఆఫ్ జస్ట్ ఎ రొటీన్.
ఒక్క హాస్టల్లో భుజించే సమయంలో మాత్రమే ప్రార్థన చేస్తా, ఇంటికి పోయిన తర్వాత ప్రార్థన లేదు, తార్థం లేదు, అర్థం లేనటువంటి జీవితంగా వ్యర్థం గావించేటువంటి భావాలతో భుజిస్తున్నారు.
దే ప్రే సో వైల్ దే ఆర్ ఇన్ హాస్టల్. The moment they go home, they don't pray and lead a life in
way. ఈ నాటి యొక్క భోజనాలు ఎట్లా జరుగుతున్నాయో తెలుసిన?
You know how the dining today?
పాప సంవత్సరం అంతా కూడా పుట్టపర్తి లోపల లేక బెంగళూరు లోపల అనంతపురంలోనో మా బిడ్డలంతా నివసించి ఏనాడు కూడా పాపం ఈ వీడియో టీవీలు చూడటానికి వాళ్ళకి అవకాశం లేదు కాబట్టి హాలిడేస్ లో వచ్చినారని అమ్మా నాయనంతా బాబు టీవీ చూడరా అని దాన్ని పెట్టి దాని ముందుకే భోజనాలు కూడా తెచ్చి వడ్డించి అక్కడే చూస్తూనే తింటూ ఉంటాడు వాడు.
As children studying here in Vrindavan, Prashantanilam and Anantapur campus, they have no chance to watch TV.
Avi chustu vaati bhavantone vidu bujinchatam cheta aa thoughts e vinku ostunnayi.
Parents serve food to their children in front of TV.
Karukane
audience
lo bayata poyinappudu pillalu cheyadaniki moola kaaranam ide.
This is the only reason why students are spoiled in vacation.
Endukatte tine aaharam ni emaatram kuda bhagavat arpitam gaavinchatam ledu.
Because food eaten is never offered to God.
కనుకని టేబుల్ పైన కూర్చుంటే టేబుల్స్ సేపు కొట్లాడుతున్నాయి.
Therefore, as you sit in front of the table,
ఆహార శుద్ధి అత్యవసరము అని కూడాను ఈ సాంఖ్యము ఖండితంగా బోధించింది.
Therefore, Sankhya explained very clearly the purity of food is very important.
పంచపాణముల యొక్క అంతర్భూతంగా ఉండేటువంటిది ఈ ఆహారం.
The food is the inner current for all the five life principles. దేహమే
ఆహారం యొక్క స్వరూపము.
The body is the very form of food.
ఆహారమే ఆహారాన్ని భుజిస్తుండాలి.
ఇట్ ద ఫుడ్ దట్ ఈట్స్ ఫుడ్.
ఇది చక్కగా మీరు గుర్తించాలి. ఆహారమే ఆహారాన్ని భుజిస్తుండాలి.
ఇట్ ద ఫుడ్ దట్ ఈట్స్ ఫుడ్.
మన దేహము తల్లిదండ్రులు తిన్నటువంటి ఆహారం యొక్క సారమే.
ద బాడీ ఇస్ ది ఎసెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ది ఫుడ్ ఆఫ్ ది ఫుడ్ ఈటన్ బై పేరెంట్స్.
ఇది ఆహారమే.
దట్స్ ఫుడ్.
ఈ ఆహారమైనటువంటి దేహము మరొక ఆహారాన్ని భుజిస్తుండాలి.
ద బాడీ విచ్ ఇస్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ ఫుడ్ అగైన్ ఈట్స్ ఫుడ్.
కనుక ఆహారం ఆహారాన్ని భుజిస్తుండాలి.
And hence food consumes
అన్నము అన్నమునే భుజిస్తుండాలి.
Food eats food.
అన్నమయ జీవితం మన దేహము.
The body is the form of food.
తిరిగి భుజించేది కూడా అన్నమే.
And we eat food.
కనుకనే ఆహారం మహాప్రధానమని కూడాను బోధిస్తూ వచ్చింది సాంఖ్యం.
సో సాంఖ్య టాట్ దట్ ఫుడ్ ఇస్ వెరీ
ఇవన్నీ కూడాను ఈ చిన్న చిన్న సూక్ష్మమైన విషయాలు ఎవరు కూడాను ఈ గ్రంథముల వల్ల ఎవరు విచారించరు.
No one would understand out of these texts.
అతి సూక్ష్మమైన దాని ఎందే అతి ఘనమైన ఈవిడి ఉంటుండాలి.
In very small these things, very important things are present.
చిన్నదిగా చిన్నదిగా మనం అలక్ష్యం చేస్తే అదే పెద్ద సముద్రం వలె అలలుగా రూపొందుతుంది.
If you neglect because they are fractional, they become gigantic.
I think that makes it very clear that Bhagavan, right on the dot, he is saying that how because of our wrong food tendencies and wrong food habits, it is subconsciously, unconsciously, you know, we are taking in, because as Bhagavan mentioned in another discourse, what food is not only what you take through the mouth.
Through all senses.
That is also there. I mean, when you go to that level, actually, it becomes another whole chapter by itself. If we can ensure that at least what we're eating, the gross food itself, if there is some level of purity.
In fact, Brother Rishu, the specific thing about watching TV and
yes.
and eating food. Now, when watching TV, any episode that you watch has multiple combination of emotions, which means it's attributed to certain kind of hormones in our body. Yeah, yes. So instead of just the digestive hormones being secreted, all kinds of hormones get secreted in the body. So along with the food, so all the unnecessary hormones at a much physical level as well.
Correct. You know, you're watching some adventure, you know, some adrenaline will go
exactly,
up.
Exactly. So there's a full combination of all the hormones. So it's a complete mess of the system.
In fact, there's this very interesting book, by the name Mindful Eating, Mindful Living.
Mm-hmm.
One of the foremost Buddhist monks, thinkers in the world, has written this book. And he mentions very beautifully in the book how obesity, especially in the US, is a result of a mindless eating,
mm-hmm.
or lack of mindfulness while eating, as a result of eating in front of TVs or, you know, watching a movie and having food and all that. He describes so beautifully, when your senses are engaged in some other activity, like you're watching a TV, you really don't know how much you're gobbling up.
Yes.
You're not absolutely conscious of what you're eating at all. You don't know, yes, what you're eating, how much you're eating. You're not aware of it. And that is how it leads to, you know, so many more other kinds of disorders and other things in,
yes,
the body.
Yes.
He also gives a very beautiful technique for wholesomeness, for mindful eating.
Mm-hmm.
He says, suppose you have a mango in your hand or an apple in your hand. He says, engage all your senses in just that one act of eating. What does it mean? He says, look at the texture of the apple with your eyes. Look at the beautiful colors, the, you know, the variation in colors, the hue, and,
yes,
it's so fantastic just to see the natural creation. And look at that with your eyes and smell the beautiful fragrance of the fruit. And as you are, you know, biting the apple, listen to the crunch that it makes, that crunching sound that it makes. And the juice, as you feel, the first few drops of that nectarine juice touches your tongue, experience the taste. He says, when you engage all your senses on that one activity, what happens is you actually eat less. You feel you need less because all your senses are satisfied.
You're, wow, extremely absorbed in it.
Yes. Yeah, you're extremely absorbed in it.
Amazing. Because in fact, I remember, I don't know if Bhagwan said this, or I don't know where I heard, maybe Bhagwan said this, and it is there in the scriptures also, possibly, that if you eat slowly and if you masticate properly what you eat, then you can manage with eating less.
That's right.
So most, no, of the time,
in fact, it is scientifically shown that you need to chew at least around 30 times. I'm not very sure about the number, but around 30 times or so each time you take in a morsel, because the number of times you chew sends a signal to the brain, which in turn, you know, helps in secretion of digestive juices,
mm-hmm,
right? So if you chew less, especially when you're watching something and eating,
yes,
you're not consciously chewing, so you'll be swallowing food more, yes, than chewing.
Gulping, yes, it rather.
Yeah, gulping it rather. And that will lead to, you know, lesser secretion of digestive juices and in turn improper digestion. In fact, one of the reasons why people used to chew gum, though it is not a very good thing to do, one of the reasons is that because the number of times you chew, it sends a signal to your brain, it improves your digestive process. So yes, chewing food consciously,
yes,
and being aware of what you're eating, I think, is a mindful eating is a very important,
yes,
aspect, and mindful eating can only happen in silence.
Yes,
absolutely, absolutely. But there is a very good saying which about, you know, drink the solids,
yes,
and,
yes,
eat the liquids.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, so drink the solids. You have to chew it aptly, appropriately, so that,
yes,
the chewing happens so much so that the saliva mixes with the food, yes, and you drink it after that.
Yes.
It's a solid food.
Yes.
And you don't gulp water as well as
yes,
Bhagwan has very clearly mentioned in,
yes,
Nath's discourse. You have to actually sip it. No, not pour,
yes,
it.
Pour it at,
yes,
you. Yes, sir.
Wonderful. I mean, I think there are so many things like this about food do's and don'ts where Bhagwan has mentioned, and, you know, when you sit for eating, when you get up, you should be as light as when you sat for eating. I think there are many things. Probably we need another session just to discuss about so many things that Bhagwan has said. And I think one important aspect we'll just touch and then probably we'll wind up because the clock is moving on, and that is the aspect of wasting. And I think that is something which is paramount. And if we consider that whatever we are in front of, that plate is something that we are offering to God, then I think we decide beforehand how much of it that we are going to partake and what we are not going to partake, you know. You have to keep it aside. And once you've decided that this is what I'm offering to God, then I take that much food. I don't waste food. I think that is something in the hostels also, we have all our teachers always insist on this aspect of you cannot waste food.
In a hostel we used to have this duty called check post duty.
Yes.
So we would stay near the dustbins and ensure that anything that is palatable has to be in them, not into the dustbin.
You know, so it might sound very strange.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a sort of authoritative kind of a thing.
It taught us a lesson.
Yes.
Two-fold lesson. One is, I was doing this duty. We very politely and very lovingly request our brothers saying, please do not waste this and have the food. And they would also oblige. But in the process, because we are asking everybody, we ourselves became very conscious that we will not take even a single grain more than how much we need. So that is an important point.
Yes.
But talking about not wasting food, I think there's a beautiful experience which needs to be mentioned here. The scene is in Dharmakshetra, Mumbai, and Swami was in his room with the then person who got a chance to serve Bhagwan, Swami Karunyanandaji, who was with Bhagwan serving him directly. And he happened to see a very, very, heart-moving or, pathetic scene. He just looked outside, out of the window of Dharmakshetra, and he saw a few children picking up morsels of food from garbage, from garbage bins and eating. And he couldn't stand it. He was in tears. And he rushed to Bhagwan and said, Swami, what is this happening? You are Annapurna yourself. This country is called, you know, a land of plenty, where food, there's no dearth for food. How can such, scenes exist in this country? Swami then explained the reason why. Of course, we all know, Swami then went out of the way to feed all those children and the poor people around. But before that, he gave the reason why people are suffering this way. And Swami said, do you know what these people did in their previous lives? They were all very affluent people, well-to-do people, and they never cared for the gifts of God that they received. And one such thing which they neglected was food. They used to simply, accumulate food, throw it into dustbin at will without, respecting it or without any reverence. And all that food that they threw into the garbage, in this birth they have to pick it up from there and have it again.
Oh my God.
This is what Swami said. Of course, then Swami went on and organized a Narayan Seva, to give food to all these people. And Swami was very particular that we all also should do that. We should never allow any single human being on this earth to go hungry.
Yeah. And I think if everyone makes it a point to ensure that I will not waste food, and I will share whatever is excess, and I think the problem of hunger in this world will be solved.
That is the way to sustain this world. The sustainability aspect, which is being talked about much often in this world, is only about this.
As Gandhiji very beautifully put it, man has, the earth has enough for everyone's need, not for everyone's greed. Wonderful. I think we've had some beautiful things emerge in this discussion, and I know there is so much more that we can talk about food, and probably we'll try and meet again. Because when you talk about do's and don'ts about food, there is it's another huge topic by itself.
Another episode.
And something that we definitely should deliberate on. And by Swami's grace, let's hope we can meet again sometime and discuss. Thank you very much, brothers, for joining. And
thank you, Vishu.
I take this opportunity once again to offer our sincere gratitude to Bhagwan for having enabled us to meet and have this discussion. I really consider it myself so privileged that we are discussing about such a profound thing, and it's actually a reminder for myself to undertake this yajnam much more seriously. Dear listeners, please do send in your feedback. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. We really want to know how you receive this program, and if you have any questions or any clarifications, we'll be very happy to share whatever we can gather from Bhagwan's discourses. You can write to listener@radiosai.org, and it's time to now draw the curtains on this last segment of Thursday Live on this episode of Outside Inside Deep Inside. And as I sign off, you will listen to a gratitude program presented by undergraduate students of Bhagwan's University. They presented this in front of Bhagwan on 28th March 2007. So keep listening. Thank you so much for being with us. Keep writing to us, and let us spend our every moment in His glory, thinking only about Him and making our lives His message. Thank you so much. And a sweet goodbye and loving Sairam from Prashantinilayam.